By now, all of us have heard the announcements about our upcoming gospel meeting a number of times. The time is near. It will, of course, begin next Sunday morning, September the 27th. Brother Jerry Jenkins, who preaches for the Roebuck Parkway congregation in Birmingham, will be with us from Sunday morning through Wednesday evening. And by the time Sunday morning rolls around, a lot of time, a lot of effort, and even some expense will have been put into promoting, advertising, announcing, planning, telling people, and inviting people to come and be with us next week for that gospel meeting. This morning, for the next few minutes, I would like to speak with us very, very plainly about our gospel meeting. There are some things that I believe we need to be reminded of, and there are some things that I believe we need to keep in mind as we go into next week for our gospel meeting. First of all, I'd like to suggest to you that we should consider very carefully and very prayerfully the purpose of our gospel meeting. Why do we have gospel meetings anyway? I've heard people ask that question, and it seems like lately the question comes up more and more often, and someone is inevitably going to say, well, you know, aren't gospel meetings a thing of the past? Aren't those some things that we used to do a long time ago, but a lot of people aren't doing that anymore? You know, that may be true, that a lot of folks aren't having gospel meetings anymore. And so maybe the question is a good one. Is there a reason for having a gospel meeting? What is the purpose? Do they have purposes, or is there a purpose for a gospel meeting? Well, the plain hard fact of the matter is that most of us have got a pretty full plate of activities that make a rather relentless demand upon all of our time, and especially on the time that we have to spend together with our families at home. Or at the softball field or the football field or the soccer field or any of those other places that we feel that there is always a pressing need to go to in the evenings. And I'm sure that there are times when some of us feel the need to almost be a magician to pull off all of the appearances that we seem to have to make, and it seems that we just can't gracefully get out of going there and being there and doing that and participating. And so in all honesty, I'll be the first to admit that if we're going to come up with yet another church activity and expect the congregation as a whole to participate in it, then it should have a very, very good reason and a purpose. Wouldn't you agree? One purpose of our gospel meeting is to evangelize. And I'm afraid we've reached a point today in which a lot of God's people in general have kind of failed to recognize the fact that we have an individual responsibility to evangelism. In fact, I'd be willing to go so far as to say that for many of us, we've kind of come to see evangelism and all of the things that might be wrapped up in that term as kind of some of those things that we just don't have a lot of time for anymore. And if we do have a little time for it, we feel like we don't really have the skill for it. We're not good at talking to people about things like this, or perhaps we even feel that we don't have many opportunities to do it. And after all, isn't that the preacher's job? A gospel meeting is a golden opportunity for you and I, as individual members of this congregation, through our efforts to expose people to the clear and simple preaching of the gospel of Jesus Christ. In Romans chapter 1, beginning in verse 14, Paul said, I'm under obligation both to the Greeks and to the barbarians, both to the wise and the foolish, so I'm eager to preach the gospel to you also who are at Rome, for I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it's the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it, the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. Do we believe the gospel will save people? Do we believe the gospel has the power to change the lives of men and women today? We all, every single one of us, know people who need to hear and be taught the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I think we all believe that the gospel has the power to change them. And so wouldn't you agree that those people need to be here next week for the services of our gospel meeting? But you know what? They won't come if they don't know about it. And they'll even be more inclined to come if we'll invite them personally. Invitations are relatively easy to tender. And I'll be honest with you, there are a lot of them that we invite who won't come. But there are many who will. And wouldn't it be a shame if we were to stand before the judgment seat of Christ and He said, why didn't you invite people to that gospel meeting? And we said, well, Lord, nobody ever comes when I invite them, and so I just gave up on it. How's that going to sound? An equally important purpose of our gospel meeting is to edify. That's one of the good reasons why we have gospel meetings. The word edify means simply to build up. And according to 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 11, and other passages very similar to it, it is the responsibility of you and I as members of this church to edify one another, to build one another up. One of the best ways that I know of to accomplish that is in our public assemblies, when we come together to worship God. And in a special way, the services of our gospel meeting will be able to help us edify one another. Now, I don't like to read long passages to you from the pulpit, except on rare occasions, but I've got a little piece here I want to read to you. It comes from a collection of bulletin articles that were written by Brother Franklin Kemp, probably sometime in the 1950s and 1960s. This article was entitled, when Brother Kemp wrote it, entitled Assemblies. And it has so much that really ought to call our attention to how important it is for us to come together and how much benefit we receive from it. Here are some excerpts from that article. He said, the public assemblies feel a need in our lives. And though we may come to the assemblies faint in heart and clouded in hope, the gathering of the people of God may help to revive us and brighten our lives. A loving tone builds up our courage, and the grasp of a friendly hand steadies us when we're ready to give up through weariness and fear. The face we see in the assembly may be the face of a friend, and the voice of its song as an assurance of comradeship in the long, hard strife of daily living. It's easy to become lonely in the pilgrimage of life. The heart longs to hear a footstep in the dim and silent passages through which this life often moves. Such a footstep we may hear in the assemblies, and it causes our hope to come back. We listen and are made glad. We pray together, and our broken hearts are healed. Truly, the assembly is unto us as a hiding place from the wind and a cover from the tempest, as rivers of water in a dry place and as the shadows of a great rock in a weary land. Public worship helps us to see our place with others. It helps us to see our need of one another in life's great struggles. On the streets, we are many, but in the assembly, we are one. There is something provided in public assemblies that can be found nowhere else. God, in His infinite wisdom, knew that such was true, and out of His loving heart, arranged for those who would climb above the world and make their journey back to that paradise that was lost by sin. Let us never think of the assemblies as tiresome duty, but as an exalted privilege. Our gospel meeting will provide us an excellent opportunity to encourage one another by assembling together. Let's talk about the preparation for our gospel meeting. What would we say, or what would it say for our church, if before the gospel meeting next week, nobody bothered to vacuum the carpet, the grass was tall and badly needed cutting out there in the front yard, maybe about half the light bulbs were burnt out in the auditorium, and everything just kind of seemed to be in disarray. I can assure you such will not be the case. What would it say for Brother Jenkins and for the church in general if he came without any preparation and stood before us each night of our gospel meeting without really anything ready to say, if he just stood up here in the pulpit and kind of stammered and hemmed and hawed and obviously was unprepared? Now, I can assure you such will not be the case. But what about the specific preparations that you and I need to make for the gospel meeting? Let me suggest a few things. Number one, we need to prepare our schedule. Each one of us needs to make plans now, if we haven't already made them, to clear our schedule of hindrances and seize the opportunity to show the Lord just how much we love Him and how we have our priorities right. We need to prepare by praying. We need to pray for the efforts. We need to pray for the speaker. We need to pray for our participation. We need to pray for our gospel meeting. Every good effort that we make deserves the effective, fervent prayer of every single member of this church. And then there are a host of little things that we need to prepare. Things that kind of get overlooked sometimes. Things that pop up right at the last minute and we think, I can't believe I didn't do something about that. Things like, well, gassing up the car. Picking up the clothes at the dry cleaners. Find out about the plans and the schedule for the food preparation and be ready to step in when your time comes. If we're serious about our gospel meeting, and if we think it's important, we need to be making proper preparations for it, both as a group and as individuals. Number three, what about the prospects at our gospel meeting? Maybe we should ask ourselves, who are the prospects for our gospel meeting? Well, the fact is, we're all prospects for our meeting. Each one of us, and along with us, every single individual, every single potential person that we can think of to invite to come. We've already covered this item a little bit in our first point, but here's another idea. Make a list. Sit down this afternoon and make a list of those that you can invite to our gospel meeting. Write down the names of those people. Your list ought to include everybody that you can think of to contact. And during this next week, you go down the list. And when you've contacted them, you can mark their name off. That's pretty simple, isn't it? Our list ought to include friends and family members. We talked about that not very long ago, how we need to be more engaged and more active in inviting and evangelizing our friends and family members. To some folks, it perhaps has never occurred to invite their friends to the gospel meeting. Some of us have family members that desperately need to hear and obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, or who desperately need to be restored to faithfulness. They ought to be on our list. The fact is, some of us have made it rather easy for friends and especially for family members to resist the truth. That won't save their souls. Make it hard for them to resist the truth. Don't make it easy. Eternity is at stake for them. Don't give them an excuse. If you love them, make it hard for them to say no. The majority of us work to earn a living, and most of us work side by side with people who perhaps have never even heard a gospel sermon. Have we ever invited them to come to our assemblies and especially to a gospel meeting? Surprise them. Invite them. What about other Christians? One of the ways that we'll have a grand gospel meeting is if we provide an opportunity for other brothers and sisters in Christ from other places to come and be with us. In fact, Sunday is homecoming, and so anybody that's ever had any connection with this congregation hopefully has already been invited. Perhaps you've been reluctant to invite people who are outside of Christ. Maybe you've somehow gotten the impression that the church is an exclusive group, or maybe you've, by something that you've said or the way you've acted, you've kind of given them the impression that the church is rather exclusive. Let's come back to reality, because the church is not exclusive. The church needs to be inclusive. The church, I believe the Lord wants to include everyone who will come, and for some, perhaps the only thing that's keeping them from coming is the lack of an invitation. Let's put forth a special effort for the sake of the prospects in our gospel meeting. Number four, let's consider my presence at the gospel meeting. Perhaps you're one of those who thinks that he or she wouldn't be missed if you don't attend the services of the gospel meeting. Maybe you think that it wouldn't matter. It won't make any difference if you're not there. It won't affect anyone. Nobody will notice. Let's just get it all right out in the open. We all, every single one of us here today, need to resolve right now to attend every single service of our gospel meeting, if at all possible. In addition to what we've already said, here's another reason. In Numbers chapter 32, Moses had a situation on his hands. Bible tells us how that it seems that time was approaching, that God's people were getting closer and closer to going into the land of Canaan and driving out the inhabitants to take the land. But two of the tribes, Reuben and Gad, proposed to take their inheritance on the east side of the River Jordan in the fertile pasture lands there around Gilead, instead of going across Jordan with all of the rest of their brethren into the promised land. They didn't figure they'd be needed. They didn't think they'd be missed. There'd be enough over there without them to do the work, and we'll just stay here on this side, and that'll be less folks for you to worry with and less for you to bother. They were wrong. Listen to what Moses said to them in Numbers 32, verses 6 and 7. But Moses said to the people of Gad and to the people of Reuben, "Shall your brothers go to war while you sit here? Why will you discourage the heart of the people of Israel from going over into the land that the Lord has given them?" Why will you discourage the heart of the people? It is actually discouraging. Are you listening? It is actually discouraging to those who are here for practically every service when so many of us don't even support our own gospel meeting with our presence. I've actually seen the times when it looked like we had more visitors than we had home folks. That's discouraging. And it wasn't because we had such an overwhelmingly large number of visitors. Can you think of any justifiable reason that our attendance for any given night of our gospel meeting should be any less than the number of those present here this morning? Me either. Number five. Let's talk about my participation. How do I see my participation in the efforts of our gospel meeting? Most of us have a pretty good idea right now what we're planning to do. Let me share with you the participation which I believe the Lord expects out of every single one of us within, of course, the scope of our ability. Let's think about before the services begin. We need to be here. We need to be here before it starts. We need to be here in time to get settled in, to be friendly with especially our visitors, and to be helpful in case anybody needs our help. Folks, I'm not being ugly, but now that concept alone right there is a stranger to some of us. Let's just be honest. The idea that we all need to be here in time to be helpful if someone needs us before services start. Let's don't let that be lost on us. Our participation begins before the opening remarks are made and the first song is sung. During the services, of course, this needs very little comment. We understand what our participation ought to be, and surely we know what the Lord expects out of us during the services of the gospel meeting. We all need to sit together, if we possibly can, a little closer to the front, if we dare, than some of us are in the habit of doing. Leave plenty of room at the back for visitors if they want to, if they're more comfortable sitting back there. And to actively take part in the service. Remember, beyond the matter of just being present, our song service is the most direct way that most of us will be able to have an outward participation, an outward role, joining in the song service. I don't have to tell you that a good song service is a credit to a gospel meeting. We're good singers here. Got a good song leader? Got a good easy way to follow the words and the music? Let's make it work, because we can do it. The Lord will be pleased. Oh, but after the services, please don't run away. Speak to our guests. You don't have to stay here till I leave, but speak to our guests. Invite them to come back. Give them the impression that you are personally pleased that they came and genuinely thankful for their support of our effort. After the meeting, participate in the follow-up. If you invited someone and they came, follow up with them. Invite them to come back to our regular services. See if they have any questions. Maybe the door of opportunity has been opened for more and more. Perhaps there's an opportunity to teach them further. Definitely a good opportunity to get them back to worship with us once again. Our participation in our gospel meeting will speak volumes about this congregation as a whole and about every single one of us as individual members. And so, let me say in conclusion, there's a nasty rumor going around that the day of the gospel meeting, revival services, is fading out. I'm not buying it. Let's prove that idea wrong next week. If we understand our purpose, if we prepare ourselves in the proper way, if we bring along prospects for teaching the gospel too, if we will be present ourselves, no excuses. And if we will participate with God's help, it'll work. And it'll work well. If you're subject to our Lord's invitation, we invite you to respond as we stand and sing.